breaking records in the city where I live. Welcome to Breaking Records. I am your host, Kelly K. Fresh Frazier. This is episode number 2. And thank you for everybody that listened to my first episode with Dia Frampton from Megan Dia. Breaking Records should be everywhere by now, or at least most streaming platforms. Please, if you can, you know, give it a rate and review and a comment, you know, whatever, on Apple Podcasts. Remember to subscribe anywhere that you like to listen to podcasts. My guest for episode number 2 is the Toronto-based rock duo Dearly Beloved, featuring Rob Higgins and Neva Chow. And I was able to, you know, reach them during the end of their recent European tour. And they recently also released their new album, Times Square Discount, via Future Shock Records. The album really maximizes their sound with high-energy doses of snark. No sad droning here, as they definitely make their voices heard on each song. Rob and Neva share their process in making Times Square Discount and what they hope to get out of it, along with detailing how they met and their connection by the way of shared passions to do more with their art. And as anyone knows, I love Toronto, so we get into their favorite parts of Toronto, along with talking about their recent European tour. So, without further ado, let's get into this interview with Rob Higgins and Neva Chow as Dearly Beloved. So right now you're out in Europe. Where are you at? In Spain, I think?
Well, we just finished, the tour just wrapped up in Vigo, Spain.
Okay.
And that's just above Portugal. So we're actually flying home from Porto, day after tomorrow. So the tour ended in Spain, but we're currently sitting in Portugal just south of the Spanish border.
Okay. How's the tour?
Awesome.
Oh, man, it was a dream for us. We've been pounding the pavement here in Europe for the last 5 or 6 years, booking our own tours and getting on whatever shows and festivals we could get ourselves onto. And working with some local promoters in Germany and Spain and Austria. So between our own booking and the promoters we have been working with overseas, we've managed to do 5 or 6 European tours before this one, but they're all pretty lo-fi and playing to like 50, 60 people a night. So this tour for us, getting a chance to do 20 dates, all in those same markets, Spain, Germany, the UK, and a new market like the Netherlands, it was like a dream come true for us because it's the exact type of tour opportunity we were hoping would come our way.
Was it a bigger crowd for this tour?
Was it a big what?
Were you playing in front of bigger crowds for this tour?
Yeah, I mean, we were playing to Sebado's fans mostly, and crowds were anywhere from 200, say, at like the smaller venues to 500 in some of the bigger venues. And even a few shows that were a little bigger than that. So, bigger shows than we're used to doing over here. And what we do seemed to translate well to Sebado's fans. They were really into it.
Oh, great. Okay. Do you feel like the music that you're doing has more of, you know, the attention of a European crowd or, you know, a crowd outside of North America?
I don't know. I mean, I find culturally that live music is just still more important in a lot of the European markets.
Right.
It might just be the case that is less to do with us and maybe more to do with just the appreciation for live music in some of those places. In North America, obviously, it's not what it used to be. And you could probably say the same thing about Europe, but
Yeah.
We find over there that once somebody becomes a fan, they stay a fan for life. It's less fashionable musical taste, and it appears, at least from our perspective, that those tastes are less disposable. They'll stick with you longer.
What's it been like, you know, sort of, you know, building up like this, your presence overseas, like you were talking about, you know, going from, you know, booking your own tours and shows through your connections mm-hmm. to, you know, being on a tour with another band, getting in front of those bigger audiences. You know, what's your perspective about all that? You know, what have you learned? You know, what are you seeing during that time?
Oh, I mean, every day you learn so much. I think I've learned on this tour in particular the importance of making yourself available to the people that come to the shows immediately after the shows.
Okay.
Aniva is much better at this than I am, but, you know, I have a tendency to play the show and then sort of hang out with friends. And watching Lou Barlow sell his own merch every night after Sebado shows, it taught me the importance of of spending that time with the people that spent that money to come to the show. And even just a 5-minute chat afterwards goes a long way.
Totally does. Yeah.
Yeah. It builds a stronger connection. And so I think that's off the top of my head, that's something I've learned. How about you, Neva?
I do think people here are more engaged, and I don't know if it's because we're a Canadian band traveling abroad, and at home we're just another Canadian band. But the reception here has been really nice, and you know, we go to different markets, and in every different country, people are always very welcoming, and you know, we find our never mind, I won't say that, but people are much warmer here, I think. Unlike at home, where I think you need to make it big somewhere else before your people at home take ownership for you.
Right. That's totally how it is here in Detroit. It's like, you got to go somewhere else.
Oh, you've been around for 10 years, but until you're big somewhere else, it's like, oh, all of a sudden, oh yeah, I used to see them when they played in those clubs. It's like, did you? I'm not sure you did.
No, you didn't. You saw the flyer for it.
I remember all those faces, and you weren't there in the beginning. So.
No, you saw the flyer for it. You saw the Facebook event that that I sent to you, but you weren't actually there, you know.
That's so true. That's a good point Neva makes. We have noticed that when people become new fans of ours over here and they post something on Facebook or whatever, we'll see other Canadians who happen to be friends with those people commenting, oh my God, that's the band from our hometown. And they take ownership of us, but they won't come to our shows if we play a show in Toronto. So it is kind of interesting that way.
So kind of, you know, going back a little bit, how did you two link up to, you know, to form this band, you know, what, you know, and also what was your just musical beginnings?
Oh, well, in the beginning, Neva and I met actually, Neva and I are the original members of the band. And so we met in Vancouver, British Columbia, hanging out at this like super sketchy, punk rock warehouse where it was a bunch of anarchists and art freaks. And and that's really where our connection starts. And then we both moved to Toronto, and my father unfortunately passed away at a young age. And so I started this band just as a place to put that energy, a place to put all that stuff, so I wouldn't take it out on the rest of society incrementally during the course of my day. And Neva was gracious enough to spend that time with me and work on that project. And it became a band. And we had no intention of really taking it anywhere. It was just an outlet for some shitty times. And so for us to still be around making records 6 records later and having toured 28 countries and just finished a tour with Sebado of all people, it's really unforeseen, unplanned, and unexpected, and just like just a you know, a really great surprise. I never in a million years thought we'd still be doing this, let alone fulfilling our rock and roll fantasies, if you will.
Right. What was it about, you know, both of you like that really clicked artistically?
Our love of
our
weed.
Love for drugs.
Let me think about that answer a little longer. Yeah, no, definitely our love of marijuana and music. I mean, we were hanging out in Vancouver in a place where people were devoting their lives to art and alternative lifestyles, and you know, we bonded over all things weird.
We were swingers. That's the real story.
That's not true, but you know, it was the shared fascination with all things strange, and
right.
Music was just sort of a vehicle to, you know, keep digging into that stuff.
You know, here in Detroit, I've definitely, you know, went down those avenues where, you know, I'm hanging around those types of weird people who are just, they don't, you know, they just want to do art and mm-hmm. do whatever. But how do you sort of like balance going down those sort of alternative lifestyles, but not like going down a downward spiral, you know?
Yeah. Not being consumed by them.
Not being consumed. Yeah.
The reason I ultimately ended up leaving that whole warehouse art scene was because it lacked ambition. I was surrounded by wildly innovative, creative people who were, to this day, some of the most inspiring people I've ever spent time with.
Yes.
But they had no ambition to make a life of it. It was more just something that they were doing, and they had no real vision for taking it into a, you know, into a career mode, or at least just trying to see how far they can take it. And
yeah.
So I ended up leaving Vancouver because I felt that was the vibe. And so I moved to Toronto immediately because most of the music industry in Canada is there. And I wanted to see how far we could take this. Well, I wanted to see how far I could take this music thing in particular. And then ultimately Dearly Beloved became a part of that journey later on down the road.
Oh yeah, I've met so many people here in Detroit where I'm like, these people are just so creative, so have so many great ideas, but yeah, they lack the ambition, and they were just like toxic people. So I totally get that, you know, get that feeling that you like, I need to do something with this.
Counterculture for the sake of counterculture and
yeah.
Not moving beyond that, right? Like needing to do something with those ideas as opposed to just fighting.
Yeah. So fighting just the sake of fighting, you know, being a rebel,
yeah.
Just to be a rebel, but realizing, hey, sometimes you should do something with it. You know, you don't
yeah.
need to just break a rule because it's a rule, you know?
Yeah. Eventually for us, it became more about the craft itself and trying to understand the history of what we're a part of and wanting to be part of that continuum of rock and roll history and the landscape. And as brilliant and inspiring as some of those folks were, we lost a lot of them to that lifestyle. Like, you know, some of them didn't make it and some of them managed to make it into like a trade or something.
Yeah.
Positive, but yeah, I mean, for us, it was about getting into the craft and the history and the continuum of it all and wanting to be a part of that.
What part of like just of that rock and roll history do you really connect with? What gives you that motivation?
I guess I don't know, personally, anyways, I relate to and connect with those guys who have devoted their lives to it for better or for worse, you know? And I really appreciate, you know, guys that, maybe didn't get their due right away, but hung in there and eventually their work spoke for itself
but I think there's also something to be said with, you know, the legacy of your family, and whether you know it or not, Rob's uncle is Geddy Lee. So he's been surrounded by music his whole life.
Oh, really?
So we don't often get that out there, but
yeah,
but it's the truth.
Says who? Listen to her now.
There you go. So please buy Russia's next record. They're being in a lot of trouble with their sales lately. So it's a joke. It's a joke.
I think they're doing fine.
I don't know what she's talking about. No comment.
At what time did you realize that this Dearly Beloved thing could be something that you could continue to do for a while? When did you realize that it might have some legs, might have something, you know, that could possibly be a project that you could do for a long time?
I guess when we got offered a U.S. deal. I mean, we were just a band from Toronto, and we had just made one record, and we made it ourselves. And, you know, this little Canadian label gave us a few bucks to make it, and they put it out. And then Rounder Records, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, came calling and signed us up for our second record on the heels of a 40-date and 60-day tour that we had done in Canada for that first record. So
okay.
I think at the end of that first record and the end of that 40-date tour in Canada, we felt like a real band all of a sudden. And then to get offered like a U.S. deal that brought us to the States and had us playing shows in America, opening for Juliette Lewis and Franz Ferdinand and all these bands that and people that we had heard of, it felt like suddenly, like, I guess we better start acting like a real band, because it felt like something we could actually do for a little while. And that was all the way back in 2010, 2011. So, it turned out that, you know, we could do this for a little bit, and we have been. So we count ourselves very lucky.
And that's kind of crazy, because a lot of times with Canadian bands, like, breaking into the U.S. is like really hard. Like, there's this really, it's just funny that we're all just right here in North America, but even like the littlest step into to the USA for Canadian bands is like really hard, you know? You know, why do you feel that it is so? And why did you think you were able to do that? You know, what was it about your music that you feel like was able to be something that someone would even think would be good for a U.S. audience?
Well, I think, like, to answer the first part of your question, I think it's tough for a lot of Canadian bands to tackle the U.S. market in general. Number one, you're looking at immigration fees. So if you're a four-person band in Canada and all four of you want to get a visa to go play shows in the States, well, that can cost you like up to $4,000.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're starting an American tour where you're getting paid peanuts, $4,000 in the hole, if that's what you had to spend. So I think that alone just puts it into the tough category. And then when you consider the size of the U.S. market, 350 million people, the size of the country, how regional it can be.
There's a whole lot of nothing, like, land-wise in the U.S., you know?
Yeah.
So you have to drive through all that. Like, you especially get that when, okay, like, you guys toured Europe. And you can go to different countries within a drive, you know, and like UK bands will come over here and be like, we got to drive so far in between dates and full of nothing. Like, we can do all of the UK in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. We did a bunch of UK dates with this band a few years ago, and we played in Southampton, and that band got on stage, and between songs they were complaining about how tired they were because they had to do a 3-hour drive that day to the show.
A 3-hour?
We're just fucking howling in our dressing room going, listen to this, 3 hours, give me a break.
I just took a 3-hour drive to Toronto. Just took a 3-hour drive to Toronto just to go see a show.
Yeah. Don't go to Canada.
Yeah. So we basically told that band was, well, Canada will kill you dead then.
Right. Oh, and also, like, the when you're talking about immigration and visas and stuff, the Detroit-Windsor border is like one of the worst borders to go through as like anybody, especially a musician. And I have people who have and you guys could probably say this, like, they have toured everywhere around the globe, Middle East, wherever, Japan, whatever, and they say that the Windsor-Detroit border is still the toughest to go through.
It's notorious. Like, people avoid that border when you're taking merch incarnate because they'll just pull you out of your truck and go
through. Yeah, and then they also have to go through Windsor at some point, which no one should ever have to do.
Windsor used to be kind of hopping until the whole, like, you know, having to have a, you know, a passport and stuff like that. People used to just go back and forth all the time. Right. But, like, Windsor, mm-hmm. like, the only thing over there now is, like, the casino over there. But the rest of it's pretty dead now.
Well, you got the Red Wings on your side of the border, so, you know.
Yeah, every once in a while, like, if a Canadian band, like, plays Detroit, we'll get, a lot of people coming in from, like, Windsor to, right. Like, it'll be, like, crazy, like Detroit will have, like, sometimes Detroit can be kind of tough for some acts, but mm-hmm. have, like, a semi-popular Canadian band or someone who's been a kind of a Canadian, popular Canadian band, like Stars or City in Color, like,
yeah.
they'll have, like, a ton of people at that show in Detroit because everybody is coming from Canada.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you guys still have St. Andrew's Hall?
Yes, we do.
That's one hell of a venue.
Yeah, and when's the last time you were there?
Juliet tour?
Maybe we played there with Juliet Lewis on the Juliet Lewis tour. I can't quite remember.
Was that a long time ago?
Well, it was 2011, so it feels like a lifetime.
Yeah, because since then they've done some renovations with the sound, and there's actually air conditioning in St. Andrew's Hall now. So it's like in the summertime, it's not like hell in there, a sweaty hell in there. So yeah, it's still around.
It's still a great room though. I mean, regardless of the heat, it's just, I remember it being such a great room to play.
Oh yeah. It's a classic place. It's still like one of the places that, you know, there's a lot of things going on in Detroit, revitalization, you could say, gentrification, you can say, like, but like St. Andrews is something that's still around that kind of will remind you of the past, even though they've done a lot of like upgrades to it inside. There's like a fancy third floor thing going on. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it, but it's fancy.
Well, that's great to hear. It's one of my favorite venues from that area.
Getting into the new album, which is called Times Square Discounts. Mm-hmm. When you were kind of going into making this album, what was sort of the goals for it? What was your mind state going into making this record?
Two things, really. It was, number one was to take our time, because the record we put out before that, 2016, I think it was, an album called Admission. That record, we did it with Daniel Ray. He was a producer for the Ramones and a bunch of other folks, D-Generation and a bunch of cool American bands. We worked with him on that record, and we did it all in 30 days in Los Angeles. So we met him at the beginning of the month. We did pre-pro for 10 days. We did tracking for 10 days, and then we did mixing for 10 days. And then he went home, and we've never seen him since. So, you know, a very strange but traditional way of making a record. But for us, it was like the most, the most punk rock thing we could think to do, which was make a record traditionally. Because up until that point, we'd been doing everything ourselves, making choices most people wouldn't make for themselves in terms of conditions of recording and doing things with our recording budgets that maybe other people wouldn't consider doing. So to let go of all of that and give it up to a producer and let our manager sort of work everything out, and do a record traditionally that way, write songs ahead of time, do pre-production with a producer, and then have him steer the ship. That was all. We had never done that before. We basically had made four records on our own before that, like sociological experiments, you know, making choices in and around the studio that normally you wouldn't make. And so with this record, we wanted to, number one, take control of the situation ourselves. We didn't want to work with a producer. We wanted to go back to making our own records.
Okay.
And we wanted to take our time. We didn't want to have this clock running where we felt like we had to get it all done in 30 days. So We ended up taking our time and doing 4-day sessions at Rancho de la Luna and Joshua Tree at the Foo Fighters studio in Los Angeles, 606, okay, and sessions at our own studio in Toronto, Phoebe Street. So they just became this series of really short, no pressure situations where for 4 days we'd go in the studio, we'd write some stuff, we'd record some stuff, and then we'd just take it home and play with it. And that was very freeing. And considering the technology available to all of us nowadays, it's very doable. So I would say the only difference, you know, this time out would be those things, taking our time, taking control of the situation, and getting a little weirder. The last record was very much based on the live energy we have and trying to write a couple of songs for this and a couple of songs for that. This record, we just let go of all those things and just followed our creative noses down all kinds of rabbit holes. We toured places like the Ukraine, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania. We did stuff between the last record and this one that was really off the map and stuff that we really hadn't expected to be doing. And so we learned a lot in those situations, and a lot of the new songs are informed by some of those experiences. So I guess that would sort of, in a nutshell, sum up how we were feeling going into it.
Yeah, I was listening to it. I've listened to it a few times since I got the record. Yeah, and you say it goes in a lot of different places. You know, like you said, you guys did get a little weird on it, you know? And I think that's what I liked about it, because it was like there was sort of like this roots in a sort of, I don't know what to say, bit of a indie rock thing, but then it goes into all these different other places, and that's what makes it sort of unique, and that's what I liked about it.
Oh, well, that's cool to hear. I mean, when we finished making it and handed it in, I couldn't help but feel we had made a record that was probably a little weird for most people, and that is like, those are some of our favorite bits on the record, the weird tracks that are in the middle of the sequence. But yeah, it was easy to wonder if anyone else would be in on the gag, if anyone else would get it. And so it's nice to hear when people appreciate the sort of avant pop vibes that we threw at that album. It is a bit of a different vibe for us. We're not used to making songs with three choruses or necessarily traditional song arrangements, but we went into some of that and then sort of employed the weirdest things we could come up with in traditional structures. So yeah, it was fun making a record that is that far out there, and it's rewarding when you hear somebody appreciates it.
How much do you go into thinking about performing these songs when you're making them?
Well, we learned early that if a song isn't fun, we just won't play it live. So we tried to stick to making, we tried to stick and picking, because we had a lot of songs to pick from for the album. We tried to stick to picking ones that we might actually want to perform live. And we almost got there. Maybe 70% of the record we'd consider playing live, and maybe 30% we wouldn't.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. So whether it's important to us these days to write and record tracks that might fit the live environment.
What were some of the, you know, your favorite tracks on this record? What were some of the ones where you're like, yo, this was a fun experience doing?
Well, I'll speak for myself, but like Fuck the Banks is my favorite song on the album. And it was the most fun to make. It's some of the most experimental shit we've ever done. You have to listen closely to hear it, but the song, the rhythm track itself, like the drums are made from hitting things in a house.
Okay.
So we basically used this old wooden house and turned the floors into kick drums, the walls and furniture into snares, and just layered up enough of these found sounds to create a quote unquote drum track. And the vocals, if you listen closely to Fuck the Banks, you'll notice that there's like this very Spanish sounding drunk person guesting on the track. And it's me singing backwards. So I basically learned the lyrics backwards, and then we turned the track around backwards and had me sing backwards to a backwards rhythm. And then we turned the whole, once that was done, we turned the whole song around, played it back forwards, and it comes out the way it comes out. So that to me sort of sums up the spirit of the record, trying things that we hadn't tried before and trying to make sounds that we had never made before and sounds that weren't stock. I mean, in the world we live in, everybody's using the same plugins, the same samples, the same sounds, the same techniques. So a lot of music these days sounds very similar. We made a point of making tracks and sounds that are full of things that only we could make and would be tough to reproduce. And I think that song, in my view anyways, sort of sums that up. Neva, what's your favorite song on the record? And why?
I thought he was doing the interview.
I'm now conducting the interview. I am now Kelly Fraser, and I would like you to answer the question.
Right. I guess my favorite might be Race to the Bottom. I felt some of those. We had seen PJ Harvey twice live, first row, and seeing her band and Elaine Johannes craft the backing band, just musically, the experience was overwhelming. So when we did those bits on Race to the Bottom, the chorus kind of reminds me of that experience, the layering of the vocals and the instrumentation. So I guess that, because I feel it's
sort of represents
the most inspired, because I am a big PJ Harvey fan, and that experience was really powerful for me. So trying to kind of channel some of those moments into that song.
That's actually a really good point Neva raises, because seeing PJ Harvey in Hollywood at the Hollywood Bowl really inspired us to the point where we wanted to make a record with a big sound. Elaine Johannes was her musical director at the time, so they had a big live band. They had a ton of people on stage and creating this sparse but yet sort of dense sound. And so that was inspiring to the point where, you know, we decided that we wanted to make a record with a lot of layers and a lot of different sounds.
Yeah.
And if we had to put together a bigger band to play it live if need be. And it just so happened to turn out that Katie and Dave from Like a Motorcycle, another Canadian band that we're fans of, were both available and willing to come and be a part of this madness with us. So we actually toured Europe just now with six people, which is the biggest version of this band we've ever had. And it enabled us to really do what we saw at the Hollywood Bowl that night with the PJ Harvey show. It was a chance for us to be a much bigger band and to have this sort of wall of sound with our style.
A keyboard in Dearly Beloved.
Oh my God.
The German fan famously looked at us one night at a show, and he just was introduced to our keyboard player. He had seen us before and was a fan, and he was seeing us again, and he met Tyler Beans, the guy playing keys in the band right now, and he looked at him, and then he looked at me across the room and went, "Rob, a keyboard in Dearly Beloved." he just was not having it. He couldn't get his fucking head around it. He was like, "What the fuck is happening?" And but he saw the show and he understood, and it was all good afterwards.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, it was really funny.
I apologize for swearing. I'm not sure what.
No, go ahead. You can swear all you want. Fuck, 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 okay. Whatever.
Fuck, 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 fuck.
But something you something you just mentioned that I did notice about this new record is that, it did have a big sound to it. I, you know, the music that you guys kind of do, a lot of times it could be have a little bit more of a lo-fi sound to it. But I felt like this did have like a much more fuller, bigger sound to it. So, that I feel like that did come across really easily, like listening to it.
Well, that's good to hear, man. Thanks. I appreciate the feedback.
What besides, doing music and smoking marijuana, what are some of the other things that you like to, just to sort of decompress or just get inspired or whatnot?
Well, we have a bird. We rescued a sparrow a year ago. She's now 15 months. Her name is Bruce Lee.
Aww.
You can follow her on Instagram, Bruce Lee Beverly Hills Bird. But she is truly one of the most inspiring, all-encompassing, joyful things in our life, I think.
It's true. We found her on our we found her sibling on our front stoop, and she had fallen out of her nest, and she was about to die on our front stoop. So we brought her in and tried to save her. Unfortunately, she didn't live. And as we were trying to save her, a second bird fell out of the nest and landed in front of me. We managed to save that one. And that's Bruce Lee. She's still with us 15 months later, this totally wild sparrow that should be living outside, but is now living in our house with us in Toronto. And she's become part of the family, so to speak. So I would agree with Neva. I know it sounds odd to say, but rescuing a sparrow and raising it from day 2 to month 15 has been incredibly inspiring and sort of changed the way I look at everything on the planet. And I've written numerous songs about this bird, and I've even written a song from the bird's perspective. So I would definitely cite her as an influence.
Right. I think everything about you two is weird. So nothing's ever. I don't think anything could shock me at this point. You know, you guys are very non-conventional, and that's what I like about you too.
Thank you. Well, if you came to Phoebe Street where we both live and met Bruce Lee, you would find it to be perplexing. It's not normal.
Oh.
She rules our house. There's a wild bird. You could be walking around my house and out of nowhere a sparrow would just land on your shoulder and demand some rice.
Oh, that big? Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's very weird. We're also huge hockey fans, so are both participants in a fantasy hockey league.
Okay.
So while we're touring, between being in this band, doing shows, being in the studio, whatever, we're constantly on our phones working on our fantasy hockey team. So between that and the bird, we're pretty much.
Well, it doesn't look like she's down. Like as much
more
dedicated
hockey addict than I am.
Okay.
Don't listen to me.
What do you do when he's like nerding out on the fantasy?
Oh dear, what do I do?
What would you like me to tell
him? Yeah, perhaps. Well, I'll let you take this one, Robert.
What does Neva do? Neva is in love with cooking. She's constantly looking for things at truck stops. She's constantly collecting small things from various countries that shouldn't be in our van. She's constantly looking for pieces of a birch tree to put in our van.
It's true. I have a white birch.
She's obsessed with birch trees. So we'll be like touring somewhere in like the Netherlands, for example, and she'll see a large birch tree that is broken into pieces, and she'll say, "Let's get some of that birch tree and put it in the van." That's the type of thing she thinks about.
Yeah, nerd alert.
Yeah.
Nerd alert.
What else are you into, Neva? What else keeps you busy when I'm down the fantasy hockey rabbit hole?
Well, Rob used to do his fantasy hockey show, which he doesn't do anymore.
What does that have to do with you?
I work in film when I'm not in music. So okay. Short films, commercials, done a couple documentaries, but mostly commercial film work. So it's like a pirate culture, much like being a musician. So it suits me just fine.
Okay. So you just work on stuff when you're on the road or whatnot?
No, when I'm home in Toronto.
Okay.
Working on film projects when I'm home. So in between music.
I can tell you one thing that Neva does on the road while I'm on my phone nerding out on fantasy hockey statistics. Neva is the Googler of all the things we see in the van. So if we're traveling through an area, whether it's a town, a city, whatever.
This is where we get weed.
No. Well, that too. But Neva is the one searching the information. So let's say we're driving through France and we see some old abbey or something on the side of the road. Neva will be the one that will hop on the internet, find all the information about that spot, and give us the history. So in a way, while I'm nerding out on stuff like fantasy hockey, she's often on the internet trying to find out actual information about the places we're touring. And it's been actually very educational because, right. You know, when we're in Ireland, Neva took us down the Dublin occult grid rabbit hole. When we're in England, you know, she digs right into the history of the architecture. In the Netherlands, you know,
weed.
The weed culture. And in
really?
Germany,
oh, really?
The fascinating differences between the regions. So Neva's... I don't know how to describe it. Maybe a bit of a scholar. She's a bit of a historian.
A professor, really, I consider myself.
She's a student. Director. She's a student of the world and its history.
You know what? Like, a lot of people like that I talk to, who, whether they're musicians or whatever they do, and they travel a lot, you know, for their art. You know, a lot of times they don't get to experience the cities that they're in. Like, What about that, you know, learning about the cultures that you're driving through? Is there any sort of satisfaction in that? Do you feel like there's been anything that's helped you grow as people or artists by doing that?
Yeah, man. I mean, we don't drink as much as we used to. We don't do drugs as much as we used to. And that's because, like, touring in the beginning for us was just a way to, you know, to indulge in grand displays of debauchery and to sort of live out those rock and roll fantasies that you always had growing up. But then the more we toured, the more we realized that if we just stopped getting loaded all the time and stopped being just, you know, out of our minds, we might actually be able to learn something about the places that we have the great fortune of traveling to. And that became way more interesting than just getting fucked up. And so I find that as people, we've grown and we've become a little more worldly and learned more about our place in this madness. And so I think making touring more productive and more of an educational experience has been really beneficial for us as people and as a band, because we play better.
And I think also touring, when you land in the city, is different than just traveling, because you drop in for 24 or 48 hours, but you're instantly immersed in a scene of your peers and people that you can talk to and relate to. Where when you're just traveling on your own, you don't necessarily get that same contact with people. So I think we've been really fortunate to, you know, meet so many people in different circumstances and kind of understand the political climate and different things. Like when we were in Ukraine, we met some people that had fled their household, you know, their three generations of home of families living in Crimea. And he had just fled the country with his family, left, you know, left all their belongings there. Yeah. And didn't know if they'd ever go back. And this was a family home that they'd had for generations. So it kind of just opens your eyes to how different things are everywhere, as much as how much the same things can be everywhere. So I think that's an interesting dichotomy.
And on this recent trip, we got the opportunity to go back to the UK, where we've been a bunch of times. And it was right before all this Brexit stuff was going down. So it was really interesting to talk to people at shows, people from our own peer group, that to hear their perspective on the whole situation and get their take on it from the inside. So, you know, there's a lot of that when you tour the way we do. To, you know, it's fascinating, interesting to learn from people that you meet.
How long have you been living in Toronto?
Well, we were born and raised there. I was born and raised there, so my whole life, aside from a few years at university. But Neva grew up...
I grew up in the prairies. But we've been in Toronto for a long time.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Like I was saying when we first got on the call, like I love Toronto. Been going there pretty much all my life, you know, family trips for baseball games, Tigers versus Blue Jays.
Amazing.
So, and when I got to be, you know, an adult, I'd go there for, I've been going there for a lot of things. Mainly music stuff, hip hop stuff, other things. Even, you know, in the past few years, I've been going there for wrestling events. And so I really enjoy Toronto. Like, what, you know, as you know, what are the things about Toronto that you do like? You know, what do you like about being at home?
For me, Toronto is all about the summer.
Summer.
There are very few places in the world that I enjoy as much as Toronto in the summertime. Everyone's out. All of Toronto's cool community-driven events are in June and July, and they got to cram them like strangely into those 2 months because it's the only time you can really count on the weather. And also, Toronto as a music community has really grown up in the last 10, 15 years. So, you know, to be a part of that growth has been really cool. And to see so many people that we've known in Toronto become international success stories, it's wild. And, you know, we're proud to be a part of that community.
Yeah, that was always something that I liked, that there was always sort of like, in certain ways, in regard, especially with like the hip hop community, where like Toronto was like our cousin here, you know, in Detroit, you know, and they always loved the Detroit hip hop that would come out, you know, and it was always just a cool vibe. But yeah, those Toronto summers are just something special, man. And
yeah, just there's a great hip hop vibe in Toronto. You guys still have Danny Brown kicking around there?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. He's a good friend of mine. I've known him since forever. And he just dropped a new album. It's really good.
Yeah, that's great. I love seeing that guy. Anytime he speaks, it's always a good listen.
Yeah, he's an old friend of mine. I met him like back in like 2007, 2008.
Amazing.
He's a good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. But yeah, it's great to see like his big success and everything.
Yeah. And, we're big hip hop fans. We love listening to hip hop in the van in our spare time. And you know, it's really cool to see all the stuff that's happening in Toronto these days.
I'm such a big fan of like the Toronto hip hop that came from like the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like all those guys.
Yeah,
and Shaw Clare and Marshall Fresh West. And
Northern Touch.
Yeah, and Socrates, and is like all those guys from back in the day.
Yeah,
neither. For those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I work for a music video company, and we did a lot of those videos. So Chuck Clare, Socrates, ton of them. Maestro.
Those guys are all OG. They're like OG Toronto. That's some of the golden era stuff right there.
Right. I had Chuck Clare on my podcast a while back. My goal this year, but I'm totally failed, was like I wanted like those like top four guys, like Chuck Clare, Cardi, Socrates, and Michael Fresh West, like to get interviews with them all, you know. But I keep on going back and forth with Socrates, but we can never like lock down a time.
Well, that's strange. He hasn't been all that active lately, has he? I'm not even sure what he's up to these days. What's he doing?
Yeah, it's been a couple years since he's released something. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, it's been quiet on the Socrates front.
Yeah, it kind of has. So I don't know. Maybe he's working on something. I don't know. Who are some of the bands, music artists from Toronto that you're fans of?
Toronto bands that we're fans of?
Yeah.
Mets, Fucked Up. I was just telling you about this band from Halifax called Like a Motorcycle. They're sort of honorary Torontonians.
Yeah.
Neva?
Orville Peck.
Orville Peck. She's all about the Orville amazing. Peck.
Toronto. Who's from Toronto?
Come on, Neera. Who are your favorite Toronto bands?
I know. Apparently, I don't listen to Toronto bands. Burp.
Burp. That is not a band. I think what she meant to say was Puff.
Puff?
There's a great band from Hamilton called the Dirty Nil. They're sort of honorary Torontonians. Burp.
Comic relief, really, come on, right.
Pop is a pretty great band. I mean, they're one of the great success stories these days, for sure. Got to give those guys credit.
When you guys were first starting to just kind of go out into the Toronto music scene, what was things like then? You know, what was kind of popping? What was the vibe during that time?
Lady pants. It was all about guys wearing lady pants and listening to Alexis on Fire. I mean, that was kind of like, that was dominating the whole scene when we started, man. It was just like dudes wearing chicks pants backwards and shit. And, you know, combing their hair real flat and from the side. And, you know, that was it. So unless you were, wearing lady pants and digging Alexis on Fire, you just weren't cool, man.
Oh boy. Yeah, just not cool. Not one of the cool kids. Did you have lady pants?
No, I didn't have any. I still don't have any lady pants, although I'm open-minded, so I'm willing to try, but it's just not my thing.
Does Neva got lady pants?
No, apparently I don't have lady pants either, so...
Man, was it ever a time? There were so many bands rocking those lady pants. Man, that's something I don't think I'll soon forget.
So what's next for you two? You know, after this album comes out, you know, what are some things that you want to do just in general? You know, do you have anything, you know, cooking in your minds?
Weed? Like this?
That egg. You know what, we want to tour more internationally and we want to get our asses over to Asia a little more. We've been fortunate enough to play Japan twice, and we want to, it's always been a dream of Neva's to go play in China. And, we may have, without jinxing it, I think put ourselves in a position where we might be able to do that stuff, based on some of the relationships we're building right now. So, you know, we'd like to see more of the world. I mean, being in a band has never been about, you know, making lots of money or anything like that for us. We just wanted to do it as an outlet. And so now that we've sort of gotten a taste of traveling with this band, we want to see how far we can take that and see as much of the world as possible. It's a lot of folks think that touring isn't a good way to see the world, that you don't really get much time, but I tend to disagree. I think that if you're smart about the use of your time, you can actually see things from a really interesting perspective.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And you can cram a lot of activity into 4 hours of free time in an afternoon. It's surprising how much you can cover.
Right.
Yeah, I also think that we'd like to make some more recordings. I mean, there was a time last year where I wasn't sure Dearly Beloved would even put out another record. We were talking about doing something completely different, starting something fresh. But then some things happened, namely that PJ Harvey show, couple of songs that happened to come about. It sort of reinvigorated our desire to keep making Dearly Beloved records. So I think we're at a point now where we'd actually like to continue doing that as opposed to starting something fresh.
Before getting all reinvigorated, like, what was sort of the feelings that you were having to where you were like, maybe we don't want to do this anymore, you know, maybe we want to do something else?
It is just the fact that we had made 5 records in 10 years, and I never expected Dearly Beloved to be around or do that much. It was just sort of something, it was like a coping mechanism back at the time my dad passed away. And so... once we hit sort of like this sixth record mark in like 27 countries or whatever. We weren't really aware of that until we kind of came up for air and looked around. We're like, shit, where did the last 12 years go? Where have we been? Where have we been? What have we been doing? And so I think that's sort of, you know, crept into our psyche. You know, maybe it's time to do something different. Maybe we should try something else. And so there was certainly a few months of uncertainty there. And not for any reason other than life is short. And the last thing I want to do is become like a prisoner of my own creation, where suddenly I'm boxed into doing something I don't even want to do. So,
right.
You know, I felt reinvigorated by a lot of things and a lot of people. And yeah, it's on, man. We're feeling good. We're having fun.
If none of that happened, you know, what would that something else be that you would do?
Oh, it would just be some other Freak Central project with a different name. It's the same people doing the same type of thing, but sometimes just having something fresh is all you need, you know? It's like,
yeah,
you get sick of wearing the same clothes, get sick of playing the same songs, you know? It's just sometimes you just want to have, you know, a whole different vibe. And that was certainly our feeling for a little while. And to be completely honest, there was even one point where I wasn't even sure we'd finish the record, you know? Kind of just felt like lighting the whole thing on fire in the town square and watching it burn just to see what it would look like, you know? It was kind of that kind of vibe. And, you know, now we don't feel that way. We're both kind of inspired by some new things. We found some new inspiration. And I think when you listen to our new record, Times Square Discount, you can hear that. We're trying things we've never done in the past. We made it interesting for ourselves and found a way to expand and grow without, you know, losing, you know, the vibe.
What do you hope your listeners get out of your music, especially this new album?
Oh, just, if anything, it would be great to just, you know, take people away from their lives for a half an hour, 40 minutes, however much time they spend with us, whether it's live or on record, you know. The greatest reward for me personally is making somebody happy, taking them out of their experience for however long and taking them to a different place where they're not thinking about all the challenges and struggles that come with modern life, and especially live. I mean, when you get to pull into a town and for 45, 60 minutes, whatever we have, get to you know, get people's minds off of things and get them focused on something like music or performance. It's gratifying. And that's what I would hope, you know, people would get from spending time with us.
You know, I was like asking this question in interviews. It's like, what's sort of a nugget of knowledge from your life and careers that anybody listening to this interview, doesn't matter if they know the band or not, or if they're even into music, if they're into other artistry, that they could sort of project into their own lives?
I'm not sure I totally understand the question. Could you repeat it?
Yeah. What sort of, I'll shorten it a little bit. what sort of like a lesson or a nugget of knowledge from your life, sort of career, that, anybody listening to this, doesn't matter where, what walk of life they come from, could sort of project into their own lives?
Well, for us, I mean, part of our ethos is getting better every day and getting better at all of it every day as people, as musicians, as a band, as writers, as singers, as performers, as recording artists, as musicians working in the studio. Every day that we get to do this is an opportunity to get better at all of it. And, you know, that's like when your goal is just to get better every day and you're not fixated on the rewards like money or trophies or whatever the fuck people do this stuff for. When we're just focused on getting better and that's the goal, it's much easier to be satisfied and to continue doing it because, if you're working hard, you're going to get better every day as long as you're putting in the time and the effort. So, and that, and take your wallet on stage with you. Always keep your wallet in the same pocket. Those would be the two things.
I would say, not to limit yourself and know that, you know, you are as you dare to be. So as much like as strong, you are as strong as you make yourself to be. So own your power.
Nice. Nice. All right. It's been great talking with you too. It's been, the record, it's coming out, on October 25th, Times Square Discount. And, you know, before we get out of here, go ahead and plug whatever you want. And where can people go online to follow you guys?
Well, you can find us pretty much anywhere on social media with the handle The Beloveds. So at The Beloveds on Instagram or whatever. And, you know, we have some videos already in the can. So if you hop on YouTube, you can find a video for the song Race to the Bottom. You can find a video for the song Close Encounters. And our very own Katie Lamont, who is part of that band Like a Motorcycle that I've mentioned a couple of times already, has been gracious and kind enough to edit a video we just shot for a song called Vacation while on the road here in Europe. We had an off day at a very posh English country club, if you will. And so we put on the robes they provided and grabbed a bottle of wine and some joints and basically took over this very posh estate in the English countryside and turned it into our own private video shoot spot. So you'll soon be able to check out a video for the song Vacation on YouTube as well. And yeah, Times Square Discount comes out October 25th. It's going to be available everywhere, and we'd appreciate people checking it out.
Awesome, awesome. It's been great talking with you both. We should hang out sometime when I'm in Toronto because I'm always there.
Yeah, dude, if you're in town, find us. We will show you around and show you some spots that you might not have hit yet.
See, that's what I love about, like, when I go to Toronto, like, my friends out there, I always want them to, like, show me their part of Toronto that they like, their stuff, because there's so much, you know, so many little places that you can, little nooks and crannies that you can go in Toronto, that I always like it when people show me their part of Toronto.
Have you been to Kensington Market yet?
No, I don't think I have.
Wow. Well, that would be the place we would start. You and I would head to Kensington Market for a coffee. Maybe we'd hit something up in the park nearby, and then we'd go for a stroll, show you around. Anytime, man, hit us up. We'd be happy to be your ambassadors.
I always love making new friends out in Toronto.
Yeah, man, you're always welcome. We live on Phoebe Street, which is just behind the legendary Horseshoe Tavern, so
okay,
you know, we're easy to find.
I've been there before, yeah. So that was my interview with Rob and Neva of Dearly Beloved. Links to where you can purchase Times Square Discount, along with links to where you can follow them online, will be in the show notes for this episode at freshisthepodcast.com. As a reminder, please, you know, share the new podcast, Breaking Records, with, you know, anybody that might like it, you know, and on all your social media. Make sure you subscribe. It's pretty much on most streaming platforms. And also a reminder that I have two other podcasts, the Pop Culture Lifestyle Podcast, Fresh is the Word, that I've been doing for almost 4 years now. And then also my Detroit Music Podcast, Renaissance Soul. We take deep dives into Detroit music topics each episode. And those are on all the streaming platforms also. So please do what you can to support me so I can do more of these episodes, so I can really build on Fresh to the Word, Breaking Records, Renaissance Soul. All right. Thank you for listening to this episode. Goodbye and good night. Breaking records in the city where I live.